This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 54, with past founder, brand strategist, and community builder, Barrett Brooks.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is a chair where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters not only to them, but others around the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about what it means to live a charged life and how you, too, can capitalize on who you truly are. My name is JC Preston. Joining me today are my co-hosts Layla Ramadion and Clay Green. We're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and supporting a lifestyle that matches who they are. This session is once again powered by Fizzle. Today's guest is actually someone I met through Fizzle, and just like Steph in session 34, he was a member of the staff there as well. And just like Steph and the rest of the gang there still, he was available for people to join during the office hours on Friday, which was called and is called Fizzle Friday. One of the things that Barrett always discussed was how important just-in-time learning is, and recently, I have found myself employing this type of learning more and more. When I feel like I'm stuck in my business, you know, I'll naturally go out and see what I can find on the topic, but not until then. And in fact, I wrote about this just-in-time learning in a recent blog post and how it's essentially doing myself a favor, so it'd probably be doing yourself a favor as well. And one thing that's great about Fizzle is that their online video library can be accessed two ways. One is just through browsing through their library, just, you know, selecting some filters and seeing what's available. But the other is through what they call the roadmap. And the roadmap provides their library in a step-by-step, just-in-time procedure. And that way, you're accessing what you need to know for your business right away. If you're not familiar with Fizzle, besides the educational library, there's also a community of people who are in various points in their entrepreneurial journey, and some are pros of what they do, while yet others are just starting out. And if Fizzle sounds like something you might be wanting to check out soon, you can access them for free for 2 weeks and find out what it's really all about by going to newinceptions.com/fizzle. And when you get in, look me up and send me a message. I'll be happy to show you around. Also, with the success of my two recent ebooks, I've started work on developing a members-only area for you guys, and it will be a one-stop location for all freemium products that are on the site. And, you know, based on a few new writing tactics that I've started to employ, there's going to be plenty of these resources in the future, and hopefully making this area will help you from having to opt in for multiple email lists. And I know that that's starting to already be a headache for some of you, so I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm going to put this in place, and I'll definitely let you guys know when I have that ready. So, moving on to today's chat, as mentioned, Barrett Brooks was the member of the Fizzle team, but as you heard, he's moved on to joining a growing and rather awesome company called ConvertKit, and in fact, this just might be his first interview since joining the team over there. ConvertKit is an email marketing company specifically made for pro bloggers and solopreneurs, and Barrett has joined them as their brand strategist and community builder. And in this chat, we wanted the opportunity to find out from Barrett about the transition from Fizzle to ConvertKit, how the move came to be, and what he looks forward to doing with them. And we also get the opportunity to find out more about his time with Seth Godin, why he likes empowering others, and why he believes meaningful conversations are the basis for great relationships. If you've wondered what's going on with Barrett since moving out of Fizzle, or you're simply wanting to engage more with others on a deeper level, then I think you're going to get a plenty from this particular chat. And show notes are available at newinceptions.com/54. And just a reminder that after session 50, there's no longer going to be the word session in the show note URLs. That said, I'll be on after the conversation to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey guys, welcome back to the show today. I'm JC and I'm joined by two of my co-hosts today. And y'all know Layla.
Hey!
And but today I'm actually happy to introduce another new member of the New Inceptions cast. And his name is Clay Green. And you might actually remember him from session 46, where he talked about his unique story with the deer and hitting that with motorcycle, and now how that has helped propel him into what he does with folks and helping them focus. So, hey, Clay, welcome to the cast. And what's going on your side of the world?
Having fun, helping people, man. That's it, pretty much. I love it. You know, it feels so good to feel and see that impact on other people. And I have a feeling in Barrett, I'm going to find a kindred spirit because he's still doing coaching as well. I'm excited about that. And just a couple of weeks ago, we met up at an event that he was hosting with ConvertKit. It was a hot event. It was a really, really hot event, wasn't it, Barrett?
It was pretty warm up there.
It was so hot, yeah.
So, yeah, and in case you guys didn't necessarily hear what we were talking to, we're talking to Barrett Brooks, and he's actually used to be one of the people of Fizzle, and you guys know that I'm a huge proponent of that. And when we actually scheduled this, he was still with them, but yeah, he's now actually the community and what'd you call it?
Brand strategy and community building over at ConvertKit. So doing a lot of the same work I was doing before at Fizzle, just on a different team now.
Awesome. So how's your day going today, Barrett?
Oh, the day is great. Got some good weather out here in Portland, Oregon.
You're and from Portland. Love.
Yeah, I do love it here, and kicked the day off with some breakfast with some great friends, and just looking forward to this weekend and the next week ahead.
Cool. So, go ahead, Clay.
Hey, Clay. What's going on, Clay? I'm sorry, not Clay. Barrett, you're tripping me out, man. I didn't realize. Do you live in Portland?
I do, yep.
Awesome. That's cool. Me too. I'm getting ready to hit the road possibly, though, but we can talk about that later. Maybe. I was stoked to meet you at World Domination Summit. If you guys aren't familiar with what that is, definitely look it up and get involved with that. It's an interesting, growing community. But that meetup was probably one of the highlights of the weekend for me and several others, I'm guessing. But the story that you started to tell, or that you kind of alluded to at the beginning, and how that's evolved into you working at ConvertKit, I'm curious about that. Like, how did you guys, do you want to go over that again, how you guys met and how that came together, how that's come together?
Sure. So at World Domination Summit back in 2012, Nathan, who's the founder of ConvertKit, Nathan Berry, and another guy named Caleb Wojcik, who runs Caleb Wojcik Films, which is a video production studio out of San Diego. We three met at World Domination Summit that year. It was the second year of the conference, and we got introduced at the opening party, and I went there. We all kind of went there as relative nobodies, and we still kind of are relative nobodies in the grand scheme of the world. But we went there. We hadn't started businesses yet, really. We were just kind of searching for like-minded people and kind of where we could make the most impact in our work and entrepreneurship, and ended up connecting there and went on to start what we called a mastermind group that's met every week or every other week now for going on 5 years, basically. And in that time, we've seen a ton of change in each of our lives and each of our businesses, and really gone from kind of trying to figure out what we want to do with our lives to really being on unique but comparable paths for each of us, where we're trying to do the best work we can, whether it's starting a company or helping a company grow. And that's been really fun to be on that journey alongside one another and be the support system that we need.
That is awesome. You're hitting so many of my high points, or my main things as well. Masterminds, getting together with groups of people, and staying focused on where you want to end up or where you're going and moving that way. I love it. So how's it going? How you've been over at ConvertKit for what? A couple good solid months now, full time.
Yeah, it's been probably about 6 weeks full time, and Nathan and I know each other well enough that it was a pretty seamless transition. Pretty much day one, I hit the ground running and jumped into the deep end, running some projects there. So it's going really well. We got a couple things off the ground that we're working on. One is annual State of the Blogging World Survey. This is the first annual of what we hope will be many years to come of the most in-depth report on what it looks like to use a blog as a tool to build a business. And I'm really excited about that and some of the stories we're going to get to tell there. And then we're kicking off meetups around the world in 25 cities between now and the end of the year, which is exciting. We've got a really enthusiastic customer base who's going to get involved in hosting meetups in a bunch of cities, and we're going to go visit as many of them as we can. And then we've got some other stuff in store for later in the year that I think is really going to kind of set the standard for the way that software companies in particular, but companies in general, choose to market their brands by telling their customer stories.
I love it. I love it. Like that's some exciting stuff. It's all in my experience. It's all about building that, that group and that foundation of believers, I guess. How are you bumping? How are you finding, I guess, the team there at ConvertKit? Like, or I've interacted with, I guess, maybe three or four different people now that are working there, and every one of those interactions has been unique and different than what I would say my normal interactions with other service providers are. How are the people there different than other people that you've worked with so far in your career? I mean, you haven't been out there in the corporate world, I'll say, like a lot of other people we have, but yeah, how are the people at ConvertKit, I guess?
Sure. So
how do you find those teams?
My people experience has ranged quite widely. So I started my career at Ernst & Young in management consulting. So I've had that corporate taste. I've started my own company where I got to hire some people. I've run or helped run nonprofit organizations where I'm working with volunteer teams. And then I've been here at ConvertKit, obviously on top of being at Fizzle. And I find that the team at ConvertKit, they have some of the best hearts and super intelligent minds working on this set of problems for this set of customers that I've ever seen. I think that we've got a really, really top-notch team, and every person there just cares about customers. And for me, that's what running a great business comes down to is can you really put yourself in the shoes of your customers and do everything you can every day to make sure that you're solving their problems? And I think everyone comes to the table with that goal in mind, and everyone approaches it in a unique way. But we've got about four teams that we arrange people into, and I think that every one of them is operating at a really high level. And I think we're continuing to set the bar just as high as we can, not only for ourselves, but just for our industry, so that people know that it's not okay to be a huckster. It's not okay to trick people into spending money with you. You know, it's not okay to just be selfish in the way that you conduct your business. And we want to be the opposite of all those things. We want to be generous. We want to be open. We want to be transparent. And more than anything, we just want to make sure that we do everything we can to help people build an independent living and build a business.
I love it.
So what you're saying is that you wouldn't necessarily be a fan of like robots on Facebook then?
I mean, you know, if you can build a funny robot, like, hey, go for it. But I'm just saying that like at the end of the day, I want my work to matter. And what work mattering to me means is that I make an impact on people that changes them, that creates a change in them that is going to make their life better, that's going to make their family more well off, and that ultimately is going to spread that impact through the ripple effect.
Cool. Nice. That's awesome. So let's just go down that path for a second. Then in that regard, what specific, who's the guy, who's the person that ConvertKit is literally trying to serve?
Sure. So I'll start with saying it's not the guy. Like, I think that the technology industry has a huge diversity problem. No, it's not your fault
person.
At all.
Yeah.
I'm just like, one of my missions in being in the software and the technology world is diversity is a thing, diversity matters, and we are so blinded by our own privilege and by our own backgrounds. And I think that that prevents us from giving access to more people and seeking out more diverse teams, more diverse customer bases. And that's one of my big, big goals for our brand is to appeal to many different people, not just white male millennials, which is so often what the software world appeals to. And I think it's a real problem. So I'll say that, you know, if I could pick like my ideal customer, I would pick someone like a Dana Schultz over at Minimalist Baker. She loves food. Her husband was in law school and was on the path to become a lawyer. She was working at coffee shops and just kind of like bumping around from job to job. And ultimately they landed on starting a blog that's called Minimalist Baker. And their story has just been remarkable in the way that it's changed their own lives and the way that it's affected their customers and the way that they've allowed people to enjoy food while also taking care of themselves. They've got a huge audience and they're very humble about it. Their heart is in the right place as far as serving people and making their lives better. And our tool helps them reach more people and it helps them do it more effectively and it helps their business become more profitable. And if we can find more and more people like that, we see our impact in the world as a company as being through our customers' customers. So to the extent that we can help our customers reach more people, have a bigger impact on those customers that they do reach, then we're doing our job.
In the past there, we talked about your time at Fizzle there for a few minutes, right? And we know that you've been like on this path for a while as we're looking at your bio and all that good stuff. I'm looking forward to hear about your time with Seth Godin, basically, because he's a little bit of a hero of mine.
Sure. And I think he represents that to a lot of people. You know, he's kind of this larger than life figure that takes a completely different approach from most people and has really made it work for him. And, you know, so I'll just start off with saying, like, I got lucky. I got picked. And in some ways, there's great irony in that because Seth's whole message is don't wait on getting picked. And and ultimately, what I love about that irony is that I didn't wait, and that was what led to me being a good candidate to get to work with him. And what I mean by that is I started Living for Monday, my first company that I founded, which the goal there was to help college students find jobs that matter right out of school. And I invested in that project for a year, 2 years almost before Seth Godin asked me to come intern for him. And, you know, the way it happened is he put out a call to action on his blog and said, hey, if you think you might be up for a project for 2 to 4 weeks this summer, hiring a team of interns to take on a secret project I have in mind, apply here. I threw my name in the hat because I just believe in taking risks. And I believe that no's lead us to more yeses. And I got lucky. He picked me. And that was because when I asked him why I got picked, his answer was because you were already doing generous work. And I was intrigued by the project that you were running all on your own. And so, you know, that's a key like takeaway from me just for my career and how I got to work with him is that you can't design for being famous. You can't design for getting covered and, you know, being on the cover of Fast Company. You can't design for being picked by Seth Godin, but you can have strong personal values and a strong sense of mission in the work that you're doing and go do that to the best of your ability and count that. Whether or not you get picked for something, whether or not you get famous, whether or not you get covered in big media, that if you work based on your mission and your values, that you're going to be happy with that regardless. And that really reinforced that for me. And the experience of working with them was amazing. It changed my career. It gave me the courage to shut down that company. It gave me the perspective I needed to be able to move on and be a productive team member, which is a capacity that I work really well in. And it just helped me see a whole new world as far as working with designers and developers. I had never done that before that project, and really seeing a grand vision come to life in 2 short weeks with the right people and the right seats on the bus. And ultimately, we didn't end up launching that project that we worked on, and yet the learning for all of us was so powerful. And so much of that came from Seth's leadership and just the way that he challenges people who work for him. And that just taught me a lot of lessons across the board, but one of the big ones was just setting the bar higher than people think they can reach on their own. And he required a level of excellence that I think any individual who showed up to his office did not believe they were capable of. And yet over the course of a couple short weeks, we showed that we were. And I think that's a really powerful concept that if you get people who have a growth mindset to begin with, and you set the bar really high and you give them the tools and the team to get that work done, it's amazing what people can achieve. And so he kind of set that standard for me coming out of that project.
Dude, I've got so many questions that popped out of that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I've got so many questions. And But the first one is where did he push you, Barrett? Like, what surprised you about what you did there? Does that make, do you know what I'm saying?
Sure. So, you know, one of the first things, or one of the things that I worked on that project. So the project was called Krypton. You can read more about it if you just search the web for Krypton, Seth Godin. And the concept of the project was to take well-known authors and thought leaders and make their collected works more accessible to people in their own communities. And the way we did that was, for example, one of the first things I worked on was I built a curriculum around Seth Godin's work. And if you know Seth Godin, you know that he's got reams and reams and volumes of work out there on the web. And so my job was to take some of the core messages from that work and distill it into a curriculum that the equivalent of an old school book club could take and use to learn together to create change amongst that group. And so, you know, I was going back into the archives of Seth's work from like his early days of having a Fast Company column to his blog, to his books, and trying to figure out what do we put in this course. And all the while being doing this while working for the man whose work I was sifting through. And that's a lot of pressure, you know, that's, and I loved that. Like I thrived on the idea that there was pressure, and I'll never forget. So I did one draft, I took it to him. He said, this, and this need to change. Go back to the drawing board. I was like, okay, I'll try and make it better. And I worked with a partner on it. We made it better. I took it back to him one more time. He said, okay, closer. These things need to change. Go back to the drawing board. Like, okay, went back to the drawing board, made it better. I went back to him and he said, this is as good as it's going to get. Your returns on continuing to invest in this project are going to decrease. Go work on something else. And so his point was, this is great. And if you work any more on it, you're going to drive yourself mad trying to make it perfect, which isn't possible. Wow. Go use your time to make more impact. And that lesson where it was like, push, 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 excellent. Move on, really taught me a lot about what it means to set a bar high, but not set it so high that it's not possible to get there.
Working with Seth, was Living for Monday, was that a product after, or was that what you closed down before you worked?
So Living for Monday had existed for about 2 years by the time I went to work for him in July 2013. I went to work for him, kind of took a little bit of a hiatus. It was only a 2-week project, so it wasn't that big of a deal. Took a break from Living for Monday. I had one guy working for me who continued to work on it while I was there. And coming out of that project was kind of where we made a major pivot in the business. And then after that pivot, did a bunch of user research on what our new hypothesis was and found that we still hadn't hit it on the nose. And I was just worn out at that point. So getting close to 3 years in was when we officially shut everything down.
Okay. So that was... that was what you closed shop on. Okay, this was, and then then you did Krypton with Seth. And okay, I'm just trying to follow the chronological order.
Yeah, so here. Like founded Living for Monday, 2 years there, 2 weeks with Seth Godin, came back, made a pivot in the Living for Monday business. So July to August 2013, I worked for Seth, came back through the end of the year, pivoted, did a bunch of research beginning of 2014, and then April 2014, shut down Living for Monday.
Okay, so how... if someone was interested in doing something similar to Living for Monday, what would you now do differently?
I would take the same concept we had and target young professionals who have been in jobs for 3 to 5 years. So the major error we made was that our target market was college students, so graduating seniors coming out of university. And that's a horrible target market for almost anything other than pizza and beer. And there's
even MLMs.
Yes, there's just like a myriad of reasons, the top of which is when they spend money, it's their parents' money, and they have not felt the pain of having a horrible job or a bad manager or a lack of purpose in their work. And so for them, they're just happy if they can get any job, and trying to sell them on the idea that they should really hold out for something that fits with who they are and what they want from their life. They're like, man, I don't know what I want for my life. I just want to not live in my parents' basement. And so transitioning that to people who have been in the workplace, who are high performers where they are not happy with the job that they have and want to make a transition. Number one, they have their own money. Number two, they felt the real pain. And number three, they have much more of an idea of what they do want to do after understanding what they don't want to do. So that's the major change I would have made.
Awesome.
That's a very good point, because, you know, if you put yourself in your shoes, you know, you graduate, you're lucky if you have a job. So for telling them to hold back, I mean, it's it. And also, I don't know, I'm assuming, what year was this, by the way? Was it in 2008? Was it 2010? I mean, because
no, this was
2011.
Okay, so it's just right when the economy was picking back up.
So. Yeah, and honestly, like, I don't know that the economy would have changed a college student's decision making, because they're still developing a sense of self-awareness, a sense of market awareness. They're trying to gain business acumen and understand where they fit in the world of work. And that just takes time. You know, on some level, like, my advice to a college senior is do anything, but there are three things you should think about. You can gain money, you can gain skills, and you can gain on-the-ground experience. And all three of those things are levers that you can use in the future to have leverage for doing what you want to do. And just make sure that you're gaining one of those. Because if you're not building some kind of asset in your first job, then you're literally just wasting time. But other than that, it doesn't really matter what your first job is. And the reason is, you're going to gain experience no matter what, and that's the only way that you're going to know what direction you want to head into.
Yeah, that actually parallels a lot. What did you see that Gary V graduation speech?
I did not. No,
that was actually kind of big. Yeah, that was you're paralleling what he actually said there. So I'll put that good. Put that up in the show notes again.
Nice.
But yes. Layla, keep going.
Okay, sorry. So you closed shop, and I noticed that, you know, so you, how did you get pulled into Fizzle? So you had a company, you worked with Seth Godin, and now, how did you get into Fizzle?
Like, sure. So,
At
Living for Monday, I started a podcast called The Living for Monday Show. I was kind of interviewing people with inspiring careers, or people who felt like they had a strong sense of mission in their work. One of those people that I interviewed was Corbett Barr. He was the founder of Fizzle. He also ran a site called Think Traffic back in the day. My friend Caleb, who I mentioned earlier, that I met at World Domination Summit in 2011, was also in my mastermind group, and he happened to work for Corbett at Fizzle. So I had one of my best friends and one of my mentors who were working at the company, and they just happened to be hiring about the time that I was shutting down Living for Monday. And so there was a lot of serendipity that came from an intentional effort to build strong relationships with people I respected. And through those relationships, you know, I had a number of opportunities, and Fizzle just felt like the right fit to go be part of a team environment, part of kind of a mission I could get behind in helping people start small, but very small businesses online, and working for people that I respected. And so those things all kind of came together into the perfect storm.
So, and you had mentioned that this Caleb's part of WebKit or ConvertKit.
Caleb's not part of ConvertKit now, but he was part of Fizzle at the time, and now he runs his own video production agency.
Okay.
I love how the important thing though, there, the lesson that I keep hearing this through this whole conversation we're having is, network, take care of the people around you.
Yeah.
Like, know, like, pay attention to the people that you spend time with, and make decisions, active decisions on who you want to spend time with, and value them and treasure them, because you never know. One of my favorite quotes is from Steve Jobs, the one about, and I can't quote it exactly, but the one about, you can't connect the dots looking forward. And so, yeah, Barrett, you didn't, like you keep saying, you didn't plan this out, but looking back, it just makes so much sense, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And relationships were a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's all about, it's not about what you know, it's who you know and how you get to know them.
Yeah.
It sounds to me that, you know, you started a company, you worked with Seth Godin, and then you, through your networking and your podcast, you worked with the Fizzle as a director of the member services, and then later on director of growth and marketing. However, my question is, it seems to me like you've been empowering people this entire time. And so what were the things that made you want to become this leader?
It's a really powerful question, you know, because I've always asked this, like, what creates leadership in people? Like, where does it come from? And there's this age old debate about whether you're born with it or not. And what I've landed on based on my own experience is that, sure, certain people have certain characteristics that make it easier for them to lead, or maybe easier for them to gain followers. I think leadership is equally hard for everyone. Mm-hmm. And what I believe it comes from is hardship. I think leadership comes from hardship. And for me, I created my own hardship in my high school and college years, where I got arrested a couple times for being dumb and a young drunk person. And I think that leadership comes from those moments of hardship, you know, and there's a lot of research to support that, that in the research literature, it's called crucible moments is how it's referred to. The idea is that if you can endure something like losing a loved one or being arrested or being a drug addict or being homeless or being abused or whatever, and if you can react in a way that's positive and if you can find meaning in that, and Viktor Frankl talks a lot about this in terms of how he derived meaning from being a prisoner during the Holocaust. If you can find meaning in the struggle, that's what develops capacity to lead others. Because in other people's struggles, you see opportunity and you see the chance to help them seize that same mentality, because it's so empowering and it's so powerful. If you can believe that struggle has meaning and that failure has meaning and that through those things, we learn to be better people and better leaders. And I think if you layer onto that, just the fact that I love being connected to people. I love that feeling of deeply knowing and understanding a person and doing everything I can to help them get where they want to go. I just don't think there's anything more powerful than that in the world. And so that's just a personal belief that helps me gauge whether or not it's worth my time to invest in people. And I just believe fundamentally that it is.
I love it. Barrett, I want to jump right in. Kendrick, I was so looking forward to this time with you and getting to know you a little bit better. This is Clay, and I just want to make sure you're resonating with me big time here. One question about what you just said about the crucible effect. I agree. First off, hands down, I agree with you. Do you and I met another individual at World Domination Summit, and he shocked me. Because he is literally manufacturing his own crucible effect. He's putting he's making decisions consciously to suffer and to put himself in uncomfortable and weird situations. I'm not talking about picking up a phone and making a sales call uncomfortable. I'm talking about a dramatic lifestyle choice. For example, I hope he may be listening. I'm not going to use his name, but he went and he spent a weekend, he fasted for a week and then spent a weekend homeless the next weekend. And it was just, it was traumatic for me hearing about it and the reason he was doing it. Now he starts talking about the lessons he learned and all the value that he got out of it. But I guess my question is, do you feel that manufacturing that hardship is, it's obviously beneficial. It's obvious he's obviously going to get benefit from it. But would you go so far as to manufacture it? I guess is my question.
It's a question I've asked a lot, right? Because on some level,
somebody.
Right. On some level, like saying that leadership comes from hardship lacks empowerment. It's not a message that people feel like they can act on, because it's like, well, I didn't have hardship growing up. Guess I'm not a leader. And that's definitely not what I want people to take away.
Yeah.
You know, with anything, if you engineer something, it's not going to have the same effect as the authentic experience that comes from outside of you. But I will say that I think that there's kind of like three places we can operate in. And I always see these as like almost a nesting doll of ways that we operate in the world. And the innermost, or like the most protected version of that is just operating within the situations that we're comfortable and doing what we're used to and doing what's safe. And I don't think that leads to much leadership or much growth. And then there's this outer zone that we go too far and we feel truly endangered and we have a stress response where we can't even operate properly. And that's situations where we feel like we're unsafe or like we're not equipped to handle the scenario that we're in. Whatever. And so that would be like climbing Everest when you've never mountaineered before.
Just dive right in.
Very interesting that you say that.
I can't wait to hear why. I'll finish my point real quick first, which is to say there's this zone in between that I think is the area outside of what we're comfortable with, and you know, whatever you call it, your outside of your comfort zone, your discomfort zone, your like stretch zone, whatever you want to call it. But I think what can build leadership is intentionally seeking out experiences, people, things that get outside of the average everyday life that we live. And so whether that's talking to someone from a different country and trying to understand them, talking to someone from or reading a religious text that is not your own, whether it's taking a job that puts you in a situation that, you know, you have to make sales calls when you're not comfortable with it, speaking in public if you feel like that's a huge fear of yours, whatever, intentionally finding ways to make yourself uncomfortable, I think can be powerful regardless. Does it lead to the same outcome? I have no idea. And also, I think if most people fasted for a week and then lived homeless for a weekend, they would feel like that's so far out in their danger zone that they wouldn't learn anything. It would be a stressful response. Many people would come out of that with something resembling PTSD and it wouldn't be helpful to them. And so there's a balance, you know, and that's different for every person, I think.
Well, I think, Barrett, you say a lot of things that resonate me, and I hate to say this, but I had a teardrop basically, because you basically have, my life has been all about hardships. You know, mm-hmm. My leadership has been a result of the hardships I've had. JC witnessed it from Purdue, and from the beginning at all. But, yeah, I mean, it's so true. And like you said, some people don't want to be leaders and they don't necessarily need to have those hardships. But the fact that you're saying is going outside of your comfort zone is that hardship in itself as a result. And, you know, I'm teaching kids, you know, part time, and I can see their potential. And I can also see that some of them are those who really want to go on that cruise control, and those who are struggling, I know they're going to be amazing leaders.
Yeah.
And you just see that spark in them. And I've had to tell them that, you know, you have to be empowering to those below you, as well as people around you, and be respectful. And I think to top that all off, I think you're right. Leadership is about going out of your comfort zone and experiencing a hardship at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Speaking of hardship,
bring this back into it. What was your little comment before?
I'm sorry that I didn't mean to interrupt, but I guess this is why we do the podcast, because we are the way we talk. I am actually going to Mount Everest next year, because I am deliberately going out of my comfort zone, despite the fact that I've experienced hardships in my life. This is a hardship that I want to experience and be able to help with others, because I've never done mountaineering, but it's always been like bucket list of mine to experience. As an engineer who decided to become a fitness coach, I also am trying to become an adventure traveler and coming up with fitness plans for the average person. So one way of doing that is pursuing this dream of mine, doing Mount Everest, and training myself from home how to climb it to base camp, but not summit.
Yep. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's funny that you said that.
And I love that, like, you're realistic about it. And not to say that you shouldn't have big dreams, but the reality is that if you're going to summit Everest, you need to do a lot of training. You know, you can't just go summit Everest. It's a seriously dangerous and putting your life at risk to go to the top of a mountain like that. And yeah. Base camp, on the other hand, not to say that it won't be difficult. It will be very difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's something that will be within your grasp, that will be within your fitness level and, you know, outside of your comfort zone, but not putting you... It will put you in physical danger. Certainly, there is not a lack of danger on a big mountain like that, but not to the extent if you said, I'm going to go from zero to the summit of Everest.
Yeah. No, I actually was working for North Face for a short period of time, and I met a gentleman who actually did go to summit, and he had met some other people that did go, and it was during the 1995 tragedy mm-hmm. that happened. And I talked to a guy who had been working for North Face for 20 years, and he actually met the guy who he was about to go with that trip. And he said that I regret pursuing summit because I've seen more death than I ever had. And it's not what people think that they see. They see, oh, I go to Mount Everest, but there's much more to that. So base camp is good for me, as well as it's an adventure in itself. But to do summit, you're going to have to pay $100,000 to do it. But yeah. going out of your comfort zone. That's what it's all about.
All right, let's switch gears just a tad, because I think Clay has been looking forward to this little exchange going on here real quick. One of the things that I know you and I share, Barrett, is a really big interest in personal freedom, and specifically, and this isn't going to get too much into it, so don't worry, but specifically how politics connects to all that. And how did you get interested in politics? And who were some of the people in your personal life that kind of influenced in you paying attention, but not just to politics, but, you know, world events at large?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So, you know, I'll credit my mom with this. She was always a very politically minded person, and just instilled in us the importance of voting and taking the responsibility side of having a representative government and being active in that. As I've gotten older and I've seen the issues we face in the world, I'd call that like where my interest comes from. It's issue based. It's based on solving problems. And I have a lot of different just beliefs on the role of government, but in general, I think that government will continue to exist, perhaps obviously, number one. Number two, if that's true, then we should make it as effective as we possibly can. And I think that we're not very good at that right now. And in some ways, we're the leaders of the world as far as the democratic government movement, and have always been. And I think that we could do a lot better, and we have a responsibility to, if we're going to be the example for other countries, and if we're going to set the standard of quote unquote American excellence, then we should try to live up to that. And I don't think we do today. And I think that as citizens, one of the things that makes me most frustrated is when I hear people say something like, if Donald Trump gets elected, I'm going to move to Canada. And my response to that is, that's fine if you don't agree with Donald Trump. Many people don't. Regardless of what I believe, leaving the country is the exact opposite of the response that I would hope to hear from you as a respectable person, because a representative government means that the people have to take responsibility to lead. And when we don't do that, we allow zealots and non-democratic leaders to take hold of a system that at its purest can be an amazing form of government and self-leadership. And when we abdicate responsibility for that, we give up on the system that has made this country livable and that has made it one of the greatest in the history of civilizations. And that's a pity to me. That's sad to me. It's sad to see, for me to see people who I see so much potential in opting out instead of digging in. And that's a big part of what drives me in having political conversations, and not only having them, but having them in a nuanced way, in a way that doesn't say I am primarily a Democrat or I am primarily a Republican, but says I am primarily for solutions. And that's what drives me on that.
Gotcha. So real quick, just to make it clear, how would you connect politics and, again, world events to personal freedom?
So freedom is a complicated thing for me. I'm not sure what baggage it carries for other people. For me, it carries a lot of the internet baggage, which is to say freedom as it exists in the online business and digital marketing world many times represents drinking a Mai Tai on the beach while you make money. And that to me is somewhat similar to moving to Canada in response to an election outcome. Woo-hoo! And what I mean by that is, with great privilege comes great responsibility in my eyes. And selfish actions lead to deteriorating circumstances for everyone over time. And we see that in the environment. We see that in major issues that affect our cities, like homelessness and housing crises and things like that. And so for me, personal freedom is all about balancing that with the responsibility to serve others and to give back to them and to be a productive contributor to the community around you. Because at the end of the day, no matter how hard you try and how far you run, we're all connected and we can't escape the challenges that we push onto each other. And so the way to combat that is to be a part of the solution. And so I see personal freedom as an opportunity to serve other people in addition to living a good life yourself.
Like that. So basically, if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is that if you're going to be paying attention to you being the best person that you can possibly be, you're basically missing the boat if you're not paying attention to the world at large and who's in charge of your sandbox, so to speak.
Yeah, and I guess just like at the core is, if you're a talented, privileged person, it's quite selfish not to share those talents and that privilege with the rest of the world around you.
Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. So anybody else have any questions in regards to this mini conversation?
Ooh.
My friends joke with me that if they're going to come to dinner at my house, they better be prepared for deep conversations and challenging questions. So
yeah,
hopefully it appeals to the audience.
And you know what? And that's another thing. People have told me that, Layla, you just talk too serious. People are not like you that like to talk deep and have deep conversations. But I think it's very important because our lives are not just to the surface. It's deeper than that. Yeah. And I think it's deeper that we figure out what we're meant to be doing on this earth. And the fact that you're bringing out all these things, some people may not be able to handle it. But I think some people want it. They're dying for it, but they just can't connect with someone else because they think that they shouldn't be going so deep in a conversation.
Yeah, and I just try to seek out the ones who are interested in engaging that conversation, even when we don't agree on everything. And I think that going there with people helps do two things. It builds awareness. You share awareness of issues with one another that you otherwise wouldn't be exposed to. And then it activates people. And people who are activated, they get out in their communities and they make positive change. And I just believe that more people should be both aware and activated. And I want to be an impetus for that, for the people around me. And if people around me don't really like that, there are a lot of ways to avoid me. And I'm not saying I don't want your friendship, but I'm just saying, like, if we're going to build a relationship, it's going to be based on something more than talking about, you know, gossip about people at work or like what happened with the weather this week. I just need more than that from the relationships that I'm going to choose to invest in.
I love how it keeps coming back to that. It keeps coming back to some basic principles. It feels like you just use the word, if I'm going to invest I choose to invest in those relationships I choose to invest in. I can't remember exactly the words, but you chose to invest.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Little bit of a subject change. How about that?
Sure.
Because I was surprised to see that you do coaching.
Yep.
You still do one-on-one coaching. A lot of people will grow. I'm going to use the word grow out of it. And I don't know if that strikes anybody wrong. I hope not. But I personally love to help people one-on-one, and I love to help people in small groups. And find, basically, that's probably about the place where I get the greatest joy from. I like to help those people grow, I guess. So I'm stoked that you're there. What's the, who do you specifically coach? Like, I'm wondering if you like market for coaching, or do you just happen upon one or two people that want to get coached from you and then you help them?
Sure.
Who is your avatar, I guess? Who's your favorite to work with?
I'll start with avatar. I'll talk about how I found those people, and then I'll tell you why I don't market.
Okay.
So my avatar is the entrepreneur who has started a business, sometimes online, sometimes offline. They have built it to the point where they're making a full-time living. They're probably at the point where they're considering hiring people and where they know they need systems, but they don't know what those systems are or what they look like. They're people who are, they have so much going on in their business that they are starting to reach a point of overwhelm and don't feel like they have any capacity to continue to grow. And they're people who feel like they need a clear set of priorities in order to continue to get out of their business what they hope to get out of it. And so usually that looks like, so, you know, if anyone is a part of the Fizzle community, we talked in terms of three kind of phases of building a business. And the first one is you're truly just getting started out. You're trying to figure out what it means to build a business, what the topic and the target market for your business might be. The second phase is going from having that topic and target market to growing an audience and starting to build an income from it. And then that third phase is once you've made a full-time living, how do you grow and how do you choose to scale? And how do you define what enough is for you and your business? And so I work with people in that third phase. Once they reach that point, they're in a role where they can choose to lead a team, they can choose to grow a company, or they can choose to decide, how do I want this to look so that it's only me on an ongoing basis and that I feel good about it and can spend time with my family? And it's in those big, challenging questions that I love to work with people. I currently have 8 clients. They're all paying me very well. I started out with a goal of getting 5 clients all paying me very well, and I had such a positive response that I expanded that. I spent 5 years of my life building relationship capital, social capital with many different people across several different organizations to get to the point where people trusted me outright, and also building the skills that allow me to be a good coach. I approach those people directly because I don't feel very good about trying to sell people on why they are insufficient on their own and why they need a coach in order to succeed. A lot of people don't. And I think the most powerful coaching relationships come from someone who is both willing and eager to participate in the process and has the time and energy to pour into it, because that's what returns come from. And I found that for my skill set, I am extremely powerful in a one-to-one conversation, and I can ask those piercing questions, and I can challenge in a way that feels trusting and caring instead of harmful and debilitating. And when you can push people in that way, it can lead to pretty dramatic and remarkable results for them. And when I align my values with the people's, my clients' values, which is what I look for, I look for people with their heart in the right place, with the desire to serve, with the courage to lead, and with a focus on their customers. All of those things matter to me. And when I can find those right clients, man, it is so much fun to work together. And, you know, I could build an online course and this and that, but I could also just do the work that I'm talented at and that I'm gifted at and that serves people really well. And that's why I choose to do coaching.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. And it's like, I love the relationships too.
That's great.
You mentioned this a lot about your, a couple times it's come up, and I wanted to go back all the way back to when you were talking about working with Seth and the realization that you were a really good team member. And I help a lot of newer people, I guess, in the starting phases, back in kind of phase one, 1.5 there. That's kind of where my sweet spot is. And I'm wondering what you, like, the realization of who you are and what your message is so vital and so important. What is your favorite ways to kind of get people, or favorite advice or favorite words of wisdom to help people realize that and embrace it? Because most of us, we've been talking about how deep relationships and all that, the conversations are so vital, but also it's been mentioned a couple times in here how the majority of the world isn't where we're at in this conversation. I'm going to just say that in this conversation, and getting those people into this conversation, part of that involves them being comfortable with themselves and being confident in themselves. And I've personally found that it's because we've been trained and conditioned repeatedly. I've got a lot of years out there being trained or conditioned in certain mindsets. And breaking free of that and figuring out how to become your own person is so vital. How do you encourage people to do that? Or what's the what would be a couple steps? What would be a couple things that you would shoot at people, you know, bullets, if you would, to get them to empower them to recognize their own themselves, I guess.
Sure.
Does that make sense,
yep.
Barrett? Yeah.
Totally. The first thing I'll say is that we've built a world economy based on following directions, and we're coming out of that with the advent of the internet and the empowerment that brings, but we're having to break systems in order to help people realize that they're in charge of their own lives and they don't have to follow directions. But that long-standing belief that it's good to follow directions means that we blindly take advice that shouldn't apply to us. And I think a lot of times we look to leaders, thought leaders, people who are public with teaching what they know, and say, well, if they're doing it, it must be good for me. And when that's not based, when our advice seeking is not based in a sense of self-awareness and a clarity of vision, it means that we end up just chasing a bunch of rabbits down a bunch of holes that don't have anything to do with who we want to be when we grow up. And so like to turn that into the affirmative, so what do you do about it? And I think the most powerful thing you can do is number one, find some mentors who you respect, who represent the kind of life that you want to live, the kind of career that you want to have, and go out of your way to invest in them and follow their advice so that they'll invest in you. I think that's a great way to learn. I think that pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, actively seeking out many different experiences that expose you to new problems in the world, new people in the world, new experiences in the world, can give you a basis for making intelligent decisions about your life. Because until we get exposed to enough, we just end up in this very limited view of what life is and what life can be. And in order to get outside of that, to really find what's good for us, we have to be exposed to more than just the town that we grew up in and the college that's an hour down the road or whatever our path is. And out of that, you start to develop a sense of what the world looks like a little bit and what's out there that's possible. And in that process, I think you have to start to ask yourself some hard questions like, okay, of all the things that could matter to me in the world, what are the three or four that matter most? What are the values that I want to go back to time and time again and that are going to decide or help me make all of the decisions I make going forward? If I could create just one change in the world between now and when I die, what's the one change that I would choose to create? If I could work on just one problem for the rest of my career, what would that problem be? And you notice I'm not saying follow your passion. I'm not saying if you could only have one passion. That's not the point. I think that's a very selfish path to follow. And the opposite is focusing on what's needed and what other people have, what problems other people have or other animals have or whatever, and focusing on solving that, because that's where meaning comes from, is really finding how you can serve other people's needs, not just your own. And so tools, let's talk about tools then. So like one tool I love for this that really helps start to develop a sense of understanding of who you are, where your talents are, is a tool called the Highlands Ability Battery. And it's this really powerful assessment that instead of just measuring your personality, measures the things that you are naturally talented at, the abilities that you're naturally talented at that other people don't have. And so it's a little bit different than like strengths. It's a little bit different from personality types, a little bit different from values, in that they're kind of like closer to hard skills that you naturally have or have developed over time. And that can tell you a lot about how you can be useful to other people. And then so much of it is just about understanding your beliefs, like what actually matters to you in the world around you. You know, what matters to you as far as what should change, what should happen, how the world should operate, and owning that and not just taking someone else's beliefs as your own right off the bat because you feel like, you know, if they've got it figured out, then you might as well follow in their footsteps. So I'd say a couple things. Having a mission in life, having a problem that you're trying to solve, a purpose in the work that you do is really valuable, and it takes a lot of work to get to where you understand what that could be for yourself. Having some personal values that help you make decisions that are actionable in your life. Understanding your natural talents and abilities. And then the last tool I'd say is like, if you ask your parents, your spouse, some coworkers, and a manager, a couple of questions about you and ask them to give you some honest feedback. So the first one is, what do I do better than anyone that you've ever worked with or loved or whatever? Secondly, where do I sometimes fall short in my talents or strengths or relationship building skills? And the third is, and I love this question because it helps you see how other people see you. If you could have me focus on solving one problem for the rest of my life, what would you have me focus on based on what you know about me?
I like that one.
And if you get that view back from people that surround you in your life, from home to work to friends, I think that can be really powerful too, because it shows how other people view you versus how you view yourself, which can sometimes be quite different.
Amen. That was awesome.
Cool.
Thank you, Barrett. Yeah.
All right, Barrett, rapid fire question time. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this. Who are three influencers or teachers that have catapulted you to where you are today?
Seth Godin, Elon Musk, and Adam Grant.
Who's Adam Grant?
He is a researcher out of the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton College of Business, and he talks a lot about relationship building and how we can do meaningful work. And he's one of the most prolifically, or the youngest and most prolific published, peer-reviewed published authors in the history of academia. He is under 35, I believe, and has hundreds of papers that he's had published in peer-reviewed journals.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
Nice.
Wow.
What is something you believed as a 21-year-old that you'd now tell yourself is bogus, and why?
I think as a 21-year-old, I believed a lot more in right answers. And now I think I believe a lot more in nuance and the reality that the answer to any given question can be quite different for a given individual or a given community or a given country. And so much of that is driven by the people that that question impacts. And I think that if we appreciated and acknowledged the nuance in so many things, that we would come up with much better ways to solve challenges and seize opportunities.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. That is cool. Nice. Who's the most awe-inspiring person you've ever met, and why?
You know, I don't like to say that there are single favorites. I think that we're a collection of the experiences and the people that we meet. But I might go with Muhammad Yunus. He was the founder of Grameen Bank, which was a micro, or is a microfinance organization in the developing world. And he founded that on the belief that if we provide access to small amounts of capital for people who otherwise wouldn't have access to that, we can empower them to solve their own problems. And whereas we might like to believe in this idea of the white savior who can go around the world and solve all the problems, in reality, most communities have the solutions to their own problems if they just have the resources to implement them.
Well, and that good point there. I know a few people that I actually kind of work with in Africa, Nigeria specifically, that they, because of how the U.S. banks and everybody treats Nigeria, because of all their spam and everything, that these kids that are going to school have figured out that they can do work on Fiverr. And you know, and the thing is, is that their biggest hurdle is not doing the work on Fiverr, but actually getting like products and things shipped to them so that they can continue to build their business and things like that. And yeah, that what you said there just completely made me think of what they're doing and eventually going to get themselves out of that situation. So
that's cool. Yep.
Cool. What is one thing that is under $100 that has changed your life?
Oh man, how much time do you have? How many book titles can I read you? You know, I mean, if I could buy people 10 $10 books, I could probably change their life if they would read them.
You want to make a list of books, and we'll put it on the show notes.
Okay. Sure. Happy to.
Awesome. So we'll put that there. When you think of the word success, who comes to mind and why?
I'm gonna refuse to answer that question. I think that success is very personal, and that for me to project an idea of success onto your audience is a disservice to them. And I'd respond with the question, which is, what feels like success to you? And what do you want from your life? Because you can design your life in a lot of different ways, and you can design your work to deliver a lot of different benefits to yourself. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what anyone else is doing. It's all about what you value and what's important to you. And I think if you can find a definition of what enough looks like for you, you're going to be a lot happier than me saying Elon Musk is the definition of successful, or Seth Godin, or, you know, Marissa Mayer, or whatever.
Awesome. All right.
Love what you just said, brother.
All right. Well, where can people find you if they want additional help or just want to connect with Barrett?
Connecting with Barrett is probably best on Twitter. It's at Barrett A. Brooks, and Barrett has two R's and two T's.
All right. I think we're good. Thank you for coming on today's show.
Thanks, y'all. Right.
Thank you so much.
Barrett, this has been awesome, man. It's great meeting you and talking to you again. Look forward to hopefully bumping into you in Portland.
Yeah, absolutely. And likewise, I appreciate you guys inviting me on, and had a good time. I hope it's valuable for the people who listen, and let me know if I can do anything for you. I'll send that list of books over.
Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot.
Have fun, Barrett. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Barrett. His passion for empowering others and helping them build meaning in their lives is really contagious. And if you see yourself in a rut in life and are looking for a way out, let's talk. Shoot us an email at heyguys@newinceptions.com and we'll be happy to help point you in the right direction. Again, if you want to get in contact with Barrett, hit him up on Twitter. Again, that's what he said his preferred contact method was. But if you want to do that, that link, among other links from the show that we discussed today, including his recommended 10-book read, are available via the show notes at newinceptions.com/54. Show note extras for this session include some items where you can see Barrett in action. This includes his TEDx presentation, a teaser for his Fizzle interview with Jess Lively, and a couple of interviews, including one he actually did for Jess's show. But yeah, that's pretty much a wrap for session 54. We really appreciate you guys checking us out today. Please leave a review of the show on whichever platform you're using to hear us. iTunes reviews are really, really appreciated as it helps future listeners find the show. Big shout out again to Clay Green for joining the chat today. You can find out more about him via our About Us page. And next week's chat, Layla and I will be chatting with a gal by the name of Summer Edwards. Summer is the serial entrepreneur that recently had a success story of her own blow up on Fizzle. And in it, she talked about how she's been able to build her own business after leaving the corporate world. And that's actually while she's being a devoted mom, maybe call her full-time mom. But in that chat specifically, we talk about how she felt left out of the loop in the workplace after becoming a mom, why service and purpose is a big deal when it comes to her business, and why she believes it was important to her success to have a portfolio career. So stick around next week for yet another deep and insightful chat with Layla, Summer, and myself. And that's pretty much it, gang. Thanks again for joining us. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.